The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Firstly, I think this is one of the most difficult areas of discussion that I've heard in my many decades and centuries on the planet. This area of same-sex marriage, should we change, should we not, seems to be an area that is very often, when you get people of the different views, it becomes fairly ugly fairly often. And certainly I know people who hold the view that we shouldn't change, and they are almost tongue-tied at work and places like that, and they're often ashamed that they're too frightened to express their point of view. And I think there are reasons for that. And one of the reasons this is such a difficult area of conversation, I think, and I've only realised this in the last few weeks, is because people on both sides of this discussion, whether they think the marriage as it is should stay as it is, or whether or not it should be changed to include same-sex marriage, both, I think, on both sides are trying to do what's right. That they really believe the change is for the good, or they really believe the change is, you know, not, we should fight against it for the good. It's not as if some people are thinking, how can we damage society? Or on the other side, people are thinking, how can we repress and hurt the loving aspirations of gay people? But there's, and I think that's helpful to realise that the person, when you argue with someone, I think almost everyone on both sides is trying to help humans flourish. We just strongly disagree on it. And for those of you who are Christians who are here, it's especially, the pressure is especially on us to be loving and gentle and respectful, especially when you are treated disrespectfully. If you watch, now I know this is not a picture of the whole earth, but if you watch the Q&A session that they put on with this, where they had Fred Nile, who is not exactly the man most Christians would want to represent their case, but is at least a man of integrity and courage. They chose Fred Nile, who is regularly the most hated man in Australia, to represent the Christian point of view. And there were five homosexual activists and comedians. And it was very interesting just watching it, that one particular of the activists, a young woman, had this snarling sort of, where she spoke to Fred. And Fred Nile, to his credit, remained respectful and polite and listened, gave his case, got cut off, and was constantly accused of hate speak. And if you just turn the sound off and you ask, where is the hate coming from in this discussion? Where is the contempt? Where is the lack of tolerance? I would think an objective judge would see quite clearly where it is. But I think people are trying to change things for the better, or trying to stop it for the better. The other reason that we'll come to why this is a difficult area to discuss is because of the way in which the marriage equality folk have framed the discussion, which I think is nothing short of brilliant. And I don't mean that sarcastically. They have done an absolutely brilliant job. They've got every right to do it. One of the great things about our culture is you are allowed to argue for change. And I think the marriage equality, I'm sure in years to come, it will be studied as a classic case of how to engage in societal change in discussion. Now, what is the issue? The issue is not fundamentally about love at all. That's part of the way it's been put. The issue is about marriage. What is it? And should we change its legal definition? And I think what's happening, this is just an Ian Powell view, you may choose to disagree, I think one of the reasons this is such a difficult discussion is that there are two related but quite different definitions of marriage that people are arguing about. So one group of people are defending a view of marriage that they think is basic and essential, and is the basis of a society that might flourish. And the other are using a related but quite different definition of marriage that they think it's utterly disgraceful that anybody should be excluded from. So let's look at these questions of marriage. Now, first, just the legal definition from the Australian Marriage Act, the amendment from 2004 is there on the sheet. And you can just cut this up. It's a union. It's the union of a man and a woman, to the exclusion of all others, voluntarily entered for life. And you can see about five or six separate ideas And that's one of these. You've got to love lawyers, haven't they, when they put these sort of things together? There's a whole universe in that sentence. There was no definition. People will sometimes say, no, that's Howard. It's only a new thing. And I think it's fair to say, historically, that the reason there wasn't a definition before that was because there was no need. There was no debate as to what the nature of marriage was. We weren't very good at it, even back then. But the essential understanding of marriage that our culture had was basically the same and had been, as most cultures have had throughout the centuries. And one of the helpful things from the Skotos, that's the Supreme Court of the United States, the home of justice, truth, etc., etc. One of the interesting things that in the submission put by the people arguing for the change of the understanding of marriage, to use same-sex marriage, I don't like to use that phrase because that's actually to presume the outcome of the debate, but we just use it because it's handy. Those people arguing for same-sex marriage to be authenticated and validified by the court were quite clear in their submissions to the court that there was no evidence of any culture anywhere that engaged in same-sex marriage up until 2001. Now, the significance of that is this, that if you had discussions with people on both sides of this, people will often say, no, this is not a new thing. Because it's worth being careful of something when a society does something that is utterly brand new. Not so much in terms of technology. If you've got an iPhone 27 that flies to you when you call for it and other things like that, technology not so much. When you're talking about human relationships, how the basis of human culture, if a culture starts to do something that no other culture has ever done, it's worth pausing to say, are we really so good at human relationships? Are we really so much better than any culture that has been before us? Or any of the other 150 countries in the world that are simply not even going to discuss this issue because they think it's such an absurdity? The submission said they knew of no culture anywhere. Now, one of the difficulties in this is that there is no commitment to truth, I think, or carefulness, at least on some side of this debate. ABC Fact Check, which is an interesting little website thing, they had a very clear thing on the history of same-sex marriage, and they said, of course there's been same-sex marriage in other cultures. Nero himself had two marriages to men. Now, I've had discussions with some of my friends who are atheists about this. I said, either the person who did the fact check from the ABC has just got from third-hand literature and doesn't have any understanding of what that was about, or he knows the understanding of it and is lying to the audience. Because Nero's two marriages to men before the Senate were used as examples of the fact that the Romans did it. What Nero was doing was deliberately outraging the Senate. You know, he was deliberately doing something that was disgusting, and he had had one of the men he married castrated, the youth. He didn't have a choice, that was Nero's preference. So I'm not entirely sure if Nero doing something is exactly a model, but the ABC fact check slaps that down on the table and says, there you go, you see. And so either the fact checker is an ignoramus and hasn't bothered to understand what Nero's doing, or the fact checker is a liar and knows what it means but deceives the reader. Certainly what he did to a friend of mine. But the thing, the submission, top-level submission to a top-level court said, we know nothing. And I think that's worth reminding people of. Doesn't mean it's wrong, but it means we should go carefully. Well, what people say is this, and they should say to Christians, and they should say if they've got any interest in the teaching of the wise, what does, if anything, Jesus say about this? It's going to be hard if you just stop and think about it. It's going to be hard to get Jesus to say anything about same-sex marriage because it wasn't happening. Many of you will know that the Romans and the Greeks delighted in homosexual sex of various sorts. I won't give some of the examples because I'll be seen to be smearing stuff that I shouldn't smear, but smearing groups I shouldn't smear. But the writings of the Romans and the Greeks, quite happy with homosexual sex, particularly between men. It never, ever, ever crossed their mind that that should ever be anything like marriage. They understood marriage as something different. So, because it was never a thing that was being discussed by Jesus, so of course Jesus, in a sense, won't talk about it any more than he talks about dinosaurs. Because the word dinosaur wasn't invented until the 19th century. So it's a bit hard. Or television. Jesus is remarkably silent on television. But what does he? Let's have a look at what Jesus says about marriage, and I think we get a pretty clear understanding of what Jesus thinks about marriage in the same-sex question. You've got it down there in front of you, Matthew 19. He's been grilled about easy divorce, which is what the Pharisees were engaged in. Easy divorce. And he gets asked for his opinion. Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? So Jesus, what he does, he goes back to the basis of the issue, which is marriage. Listen to what Jesus says about marriage. Jesus answered, "Have you not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female? And God said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder." Briefly, what do we see Jesus thinks about marriage? Firstly, you want to understand marriage according to Jesus? And that is the basic question in all this is, how do you get any insight into marriage? Basically, most people in our culture do what most people in every culture do. They echo their culture. So we think it's a real live issue, should there be such a thing as same-sex marriage. It struck me yesterday as I was reflecting on this again. You take maybe 5 billion of the people on the earth at the moment. You take any culture you like, apart from westernized culture in the last 20 or 30 years. If you said, what do you think about same-sex marriage? I think, what are you talking about? It's for the great bulk of human life, it's been a nonsense. Where is wisdom or truth or insight where does it come from? Jesus says, have you not read? It's clear where Jesus thinks insight comes from. Have you not read? And he goes back to the scriptures. Christians go back to Jesus. Jesus sends us back to the scriptures. Jesus answered, have you not read? The second thing is, we live in a created world. He who made them from the beginning made them male and female. You live in somebody else's world. Who you are, you're a design product. And so he says, we're a made people. So he goes back to the notion of creation. What's the thing he says about the way of being made, male and female? It's very emphatic. It's essential to human life that we are made male and female. The first chapter of the Bible says very few things about humans. It's about three things, that one of them is male and female. And as we've talked about in other contexts, all but two cells of your body are male or female if you are male or female. It's just your hair. I think it's your hair or your fingernails and your white blood cells. We can pull any cell out of your body from any organ in your body and we can tell if it's from a male or a female body. It is cellular, our sexuality. And if you're gay or straight, it'll tell you if you're male or female. Right? The cells aren't different at that level. So Jesus says, the authority is the word of God. Jesus says, we are made. Sexual difference is basic. In a way in which I think we actually know. Male and female. And sexual difference then is the basis of marriage, according to Jesus. God said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife and the two will become one flesh. Sexual difference becomes the basis of marriage. And you have two families discussed. The man leaves his family and starts a new family with his wife. It's helpful to realize how revolutionary this statement from the first page of the Bible is. In every culture around the Middle East, and in most cultures still, or many cultures still, what happens is the woman leaves her family and she becomes the possession not of her husband, but of her husband's daddy. That's the relationship. So she becomes part of that clan and tribe under the patriarch. It's very interesting. In the very first chapter of the Bible says, no, we're not doing that. The man leaves and he cleaves to his wife. The wife is pictured like the tree and the man is like the branch that is sort of joined into the tree. And so it's a remarkably revolutionary statement. And I don't mind, well, I do mind, but I'd rather people who mock the Bible at least understood it and at least gave it points when it deserves points. And the flipping will deserve points for that. Jesus points to that. There are two families it talks about. The father's family, the husband's family, and the new family, the husband and the wife, two families. And it's about oneness. It's the sexuality of it. It's the two becoming one, which is classically seen in the act of sexual intercourse. The engineering is not bad, where the two become one. bodily fluids from one are delivered to the other, and bango, out of that can come new life. There is something brilliant, it doesn't prove anything perhaps, there is something extremely brilliant in the way that, God or nature has put it together. That when a couple express their love in the sort of unitive act that releases all these sort of feel-good protective hormones as well, as you know, new life can be generated. It's kind of clever the way it works together. The authority is God's word. We're made. Sexual difference is basic. Sexual difference leads to marriage. It's about oneness. It's twice mentioned. And then at the end is this threat that Jesus gives. And I have to say these words in marriages, and I always have a feeling that there's a level of menace in them from Jesus. Look at the last words Jesus says. What therefore God has joined together, let no human put asunder. Saying, don't mess with this. Either of you, don't separate this. Anybody else feels like getting between these two, don't even think about it. You'll have to answer to God for that. That's the basic teaching of marriage. And it is built, as I think we kind of know instinctively, it's built on sexual difference. Let me quote to you from Claude Levi Strauss, not the great tailor of jeans, but the father of sociological anthropology, a Frenchman. I've combined this with an extra couple of words from Powell, so this is a Strauss and Powell thing. If you take out the words in brackets, you get back to the original. Strauss says, marriage is a social institution with a biological foundation. It's a social institution with a biological foundation. And I think that's clearly what Jesus thinks. God made us male and female. That leads to marriage. So the sexual difference, although it's highly debatable in our culture now, is seen by Jesus at least to be essential. Now, people are entitled to walk away from Jesus and say they know more about human life than Jesus did. But if we're going to ask what does Jesus think, it seems to be fairly unmistakable. When it comes to the sort of classical understanding of marriage, I want to suggest to you in the last 70 years, every single thread of that almost has been attacked. The great triumph of romance, which has come to us through Walt Disney and through the lives of the stars. Any number of couples walk away from their marriages because they've fallen in love. And if you have a go at them for doing that, you're a monster. The complete triumph of romance over everything. The pill, the technology changes us in the way that we think. The pill was an extraordinary change in our culture that you could separate sexual intercourse from children almost perfectly with the pill. And I think the Roman Catholics, bless their socks, were onto something when they resisted the pill. I don't agree with them, they may be right, but they were aware that you're doing something significant when you totally break the connection between sexual intercourse as an expression of love or passion and any possibility of new life. Everything's been broken, so no longer is sex considered to belong in marriage. You're a fool if you leave it for marriage. All over our culture, the understanding is if you like someone quite a bit and have some sort of meaningful relationship, or at least if you understand that it's a meaningless relationship, sex is fine. Children can be had before or after marriage. It is such a relief when someone famous has a baby and you discover that their partner is actually their wife. There was some stupid famous person in Australia was announcing that they had a child, and at the beginning of the Herald, because that's how you're supposed to, and his partner, whatever her name was, and I even read through the article, although I couldn't give a fig about what famous people do really, and it was nice to know that they were married. Because you think it doesn't matter that in our culture very often famous people have children first, then get married. Of course it matters. Every part of the ordinary understanding and of God's understanding of marriage has been questioned. Divorce, easy divorce, it is not for good. I think most people get married with a sense that you were really hoping this will last. But hey, let's be realistic, you know. Things fall apart. It's no crime, it's no sin, it just happens. It's not how Jesus sees it. And now the male and femaleness is being questioned. So I'm suggesting that over the last years we've seen almost every part of the Jesus understanding of marriage, which has sort of become classically our culture's questioned. Some would call this the conjugal view or the covenant view of marriage. The one I think that's operating in an undefined way by people who are seeking to change the law is what's more could be called like partnership marriage. Its fundamental reality is intense romantic attraction and affection. That's the fundamental reality. And that should be celebrated, shouldn't it? And the government should commend it, shouldn't it? I wouldn't have thought so, actually. I think, what the hell has the government got to do with allowing you to celebrate your love? The reason why the government has been concerned about marriage, and this is Bertrand Russell, the old atheist philosopher, says it, is because of children. It's because of its intergenerational social effect. That's why the government has been concerned about marriage. Not that it gives a fig about loving people. That's not its concern at all. But it is concerned about children. But now it's not about that at all. It's about intense sexual romantic affection seeking public and even state recognition with the hope that the relationship will last for a long time, but realistically, no great expectation. So I've been to a number of weddings run by celebrants, and they use this remarkable phrase where they say, they make whatever vows they write, and then they say, as long as love lasts, which, as you know, if you know anything about love in the way it's used in that sort of promise, is a meaningless promise, right? Because it's just a promise to love, to care for the other person as long as I feel like it. So the partnership marriage, the same-sex push, has used two great slogans, both of which are terrifically clever, but you can't build anything on these. Love wins, equal marriage. And we can leave it to the question time, but no one believes love is, if you love someone, that's a sufficient basis to call it marriage. There are all sorts of love that we'll put you in prison for, frankly. So love wins is far too simplistic. Every single definition of marriage that I've come close to is discriminatory. It always excludes some people on the basis of their relationship to you, perhaps your relationship to someone else who you're married to, the age of the person, all sorts of... Every marriage is discriminatory. So if we move the same-sex marriage, we'll see it will remain discriminatory. Equal marriage, some of you will know of the fight that happened at the gay Mardi Gras about 2 or 3 years ago on the equal marriage, when that slogan became big, when the polyamorous were not allowed to argue for their right to get married. And they were banned from having a float until they said they wouldn't have any posters on their float arguing for their right. Polyamorous are people who argue that they can only function well in a marriage of two, three, four, five, or more than two, three, four, five people. Maybe all homosexual, maybe a blending. And they seriously, and I talked with some of them here in Sydney, they were excluded from arguing for their right to marriage at the equal marriage Mardi Gras some years ago. There was a reason for that. But I'm suggesting that these slogans, they sound good, it's hard not to applaud, but they're actually no basis for any sort of society. As Paul Keating says, back in the late 90s, he said, you cannot build a society on same-sex marriage. He may have changed, he may have evolved. So before we look at some of the inseparable though distinguishable issues that come out of this, one of the reasons why this debate is so hard is that the people arguing for same-sex marriage, and I think most of them are arguing for it for good reason, they actually think it's a good thing, they use the language of human rights. This is why in the end it's going to be so difficult for those who disagree if or when the law gets changed. It is, of course, not a human right to marry anyone you wish. That's a nonsense. You can't, well, unless you can just make up human rights as you go. But the human rights that the UN and others have agreed to are much more fundamental than that. And a French couple took the French government to court before one of the EEC courts, one of the European courts, and the European court said, of course, it's not a human right. You might want to change the law, but you can't argue for it on human rights. But that is the way it's constantly argued. I've got members of my family and dear close friends who just assume it's a human right. Because it's the right to love and to be loved and to celebrate your love. And it's the right to do it with as much spectacular expense as heterosexual people do. And if you're saying no to it, if you've got the partnership view of love, you're saying no to love. You're saying to some people that your love is not worth anything and you are a monster. So there are these two basic views of marriage, the sort of conjugal covenant, if I can use the word Catholic, not meaning Roman Catholic, but the universal understanding of marriage. The one thing I think that if you go to the Kalahari Bushmen or the Eskimos or the Amazonians or the ancient Chinese, the one thing that is always true of marriage is it's male and female. Almost always it's one man, one woman. In most cultures, what the rich always do is they take more than they need, more money than they need, more lands than they need, more properties with negative gearing than they need, all that sort of stuff, and more women than they need. So the rich and the powerful will corner more of the market. But it's just not true to say that in most cultures through history it's been polygamy. It hasn't been. You walk into all sorts of cultures and it's basic. But the one thing about marriage, it is always across the sexes until this present situation. Now let's move to a couple of inseparable, though distinguishable, issues, and we can throw it open for questions. The first is children. If the same-sex marriage thing happens, we will permanently marginalise a child's instinctive, natural desire and longing and right, perhaps, to have access to its mother and father. Many children, because of death, because of marital breakdown, because of other things, get brought up by one parent or another. Quite a few children get adopted. But all those things are restorative, and we acknowledge single-sex parents, you know, they acknowledge the sadness of not having the mum and the dad together to bring up the kid. Elton John, he's got two boys in his relationship with his lover that they've had genetically made. Interesting comment, and to his credit he makes this comment, it's going to be heartbreaking for him to grow up and know that he doesn't have a mummy. I think full marks him for saying that. Not so much full marks for creating the problem. He knowingly created a kid and cut him off from access to his mother. This is a thing that needs to be taken with some seriousness. If same-sex marriage is passed, you are not allowed to be able to question that. A marriage is a marriage is a marriage. And you will never be able to ask the question, in what sort of situation do children normally thrive? The way that people argue this, because they're not interested in the outcome, is they take the worst case of a heterosexual couple with the best case of a homosexual couple and say, would you rather the kid be there where people are bashing you, or here where they... Anyone who starts to argue like that is obviously not interested in finding what's best. They're trying to win an argument to when you argue the best versus the worst. We'll permanently mar-, and you won't be able to even discuss it. There's an article there. Kevin Rudd, that fine scholar of human nature. Kevin Rudd, on the Q&A, when he had a go at that Christian pastor who he had known in Queensland, and said, studies have shown that children in same-sex marriage do as well, if not better. Well, there's an analysis there of that study. Those sorts of studies are fundamentally, I mean, you can have a look at the numbers they use, the self-reporting, the self-selecting, etc. It was a rubbish study. Studies on humans, what makes humans flourish, and that need to be studied very carefully. There's a lot of nonsense going with numbers. I'll give you an example that Sandy Grant noticed. Channel 9 had one of those polls that are so significant, where people ring up and say if they're for or against something, or they can do it on their computer. 94% of Australians were in favour of same-sex marriage. If you go into the numbers, 24 million Australians voted. Really, that's all the babies as well, right? Which means that someone's had bots going round and round or something. It's completely... Now, did Channel 9 not realise that? Of course Channel 9 realised it. But they just put it there because it helped the argument. Because our media, as you know, are not reporting but canvassing. That's one thing which will permanently change in our culture. And children are not central to this. It's all about the adults, really. And the arguments about children, I think, are just done to silence the contrary voice. Secondly, there are rationally unavoidable consequences. Once you change the definition of marriage and make it fundamentally about partnership marriage, strong sexual affection and attraction, it is impossible to not allow other forms of marriage change. And I put a thing up. You always get accused of slippery sloping with that if you bring up the consequences. Slippery sloping is only a fair title of abuse if there's no logical connection between the change and the other changes you say are going to come in, unexpected consequences. But as some of you know, within less than a week of the US Supreme Court changed its mind, there were articles in serious American media on polyamory. And yesterday in the New York Times, or this week, there's an article seriously exploring the possibilities. It's what people were saying would happen, it's what we were constantly pilloried for happen, and to her shame, Senator Wong has come out with a thing like this in the last week. They used the word offended. First person to be offended wins the argument. In a sense, I'm not interested. Well, I am interested if you're offended. But that is an argument. It's like in a workplace situation, first person who cries bully wins. Now, it doesn't mean at times people aren't bullies, but it just seems to me in some sense, first of all, I'm being bullied, you win. Right? Now we're all really nervous. And so people yell out the word offended. Jennifer Wong was saying she's offended when people say if this changes. I think, well, it's true. I mean, in England, which is a bit ahead of us in that backward sort of way, the leader of the Greens and some of the leading lights in the Labour Party have said publicly and are in print saying we're open to further changes, particularly with the issue of polyamory. It's unintended. I don't think most people think that. I just wish that the same-sex marriage people, the equal love thing, had been more honest with the Australian public. It doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. Right? That's not a reason necessarily not to change the law, but we should at least be informed. It'll affect children. There are consequences. And lastly, Paul Kelly from The Australian, I don't read The Australian, but friends sent me a copy of the article. Not a Christian, as far as I can tell. He's in favour of the same-sex marriage change. But he said, we are in real trouble here with human rights. He said, almost certainly, the rights of people who don't believe this will be smashed. So much so that even Tim Wilson, who's the openly gay human rights sort of commissioner or guardian, he is also expressing concerns. That as we set up things, you know, to look after the 1.6% of Australians who are gay, although an awful lot of gay people aren't particularly interested in getting married, it will have all sorts of consequences. And this is not fear-mongering. We know this. So, for example, recently, Bishop Porteous from Tasmania, the Catholic Church, put out a really excellent little booklet through all their schools. And I think it was called Don't Mess With Marriage or something like that. It starts off with a very careful, tender thing about all people are valuable to God, same-sex people are valued to God, they're all to be treated with love and respect. They went through out why they think marriage shouldn't change. Well, Rodney Croom, who's the leader of Equal Marriage, a Tasmanian, immediately threatened legal action and used all sorts of vicious derogatory words about how this was, you know, about what they were messing with children. They had no right to say it. Now, he's backed off because I think he's realised politically that's a mistake. But immediately there was a threat of taking him to court for simply stating what most human beings believe on the planet, what Roman Catholics and Christians have always... I shouldn't say that. Roman Catholics... as one part of the Christian, I didn't want to say Roman Catholic and Christian, what the Roman Catholic Church has always believed, that this has now become in danger of criminal proceedings, of civil proceedings. And this has happened to the chief rabbi in Amsterdam. There are threats about him. There are four bishops in Spain there are threats about. And there's a problem that if this, particularly if it's argued as a human right, there is no place for people who oppose human rights. You can't run slavery. That's a human right. If same-sex marriage is argued as it has been, as a right, there'll be no... And there's all sorts of... There's Brendan Ike from Mozilla who had to stand down. There are cake makers who've been sent broke. Mr. and Mrs. Bull are harmless. A couple of Christians who ran a bed and breakfast in their home and since the 1990s had a thing that they don't rent out rooms with double beds to anybody who's not married, have lost their business because a gay couple came and wanted the use of the bed. Kevin Cochrane, the fire chief of Alabama, wrote a little booklet which he self-published just for the Christian men of his Baptist church, and he had a standard statement of the Bible's view of marriage. He's lost his job. Interestingly, it's a big cause in America, but it's not been reported once, I think, in the media here. And I'm suggesting there are all sorts of ramifications that will happen when this gets in, because it's very unlikely that the Australian laws, if they change, will have anything like sufficient protection. Denmark is the first country that brought in same-sex marriage. Very strong protection for the church. I'm not the least concerned for myself as a minister. Very strong protections 13 years ago or so. 3 years ago, they were just about all removed. And because it has to be removed if this is a human right, doesn't it? This is why the discussion is so difficult. Last thing is this. Down the bottom is some of the references from John 8, where Jesus... That famous story, he meets this woman caught in the very act of adultery. He protects her from the bully, as Christians should always protect whoever, even though 5 minutes ago she was having sex with someone she shouldn't have been having sex with. He protects her, forgives her. He's flexing the muscle of compassion and kindness and embracing. At the same time, he says, go and sin no more. Jesus can flex two muscles at once, warmth and compassion and engagement and ethical clarity. Our society seems to think you can only do one, and if you are a Christian, you need to learn to flex both as Jesus does. So I think Jesus is against same-sex marriage. Not that people care. What would he know? Right. Well, I can find the equality argument to human beings. If equal love means love and love wins applies, why can't someone marry their favourite budgerigar or painting? Yes, this is a sort of a slippery slope sort of argument, isn't it? But I think in the end, in the same way as Peter Singer argues speciesism, which is like racism, it can be argued that you can have a consenting, particularly an intelligent animal, not so much a budgerigar, but if you have a particularly intelligent animal, you can say it loves loving too. I don't think that's going to happen in a hurry. I think there'll be many other changes that will come. I think already in Brazil, which is one of the earlier countries in this, there's either massive pressure or they're already doing it. Civil celebrants are doing polyamory. As Chesterton said, do not knock down a wall unless you first know why it was built. Have we lost respect for our basic institutions? Yes, I think we have, and I think it's just worth, not that I expect people will, to stop and think, 150 of the 170 countries in the world still, and it's not because they're Christian or religiously, it's some of the Chinese culture, not much interested in it, Islamic cult, Buddhist countries, all sorts of countries. It's worth us thinking this is a very Eurocentric thing. And don't forget, the leaders of the Eurocentric world were very big on, what's that thing where you choose the genetics? It's not euthanasia. Eugenics. And it was only in the 60s that the last laws in favour of that sort of stuff were removed from American statute books. Everyone who was anyone, and some of the best minds in the 20th century were in favour of eugenics. Now, we're not in favour of that anymore. Society and the leaders and the elite get it wrong. One of the interesting things that might happen is, when we began to make casinos, who were the people arguing against it? Christians. What a bunch of fuddy-duddy killjoys. Surely adults can know. Now, even the ABC and government is concerned about the terrible effect of the casinos, on the poor, mostly. Same with pornography. Christians argued against this constant. Now even some of the great liberating mothers and fathers of the 60s said, this isn't what we meant. It'll be interesting to see where this progresses, because nothing stays still. I do think Chesterton is right. We're being far too quick on this. How can plural marriage be resisted if same-sex marriage comes in? I think absolutely. Frankly, it cannot be resisted. And when people say it's not even to come to the table, they're either ignorant or fibbing, because we know from all around the world it is. Read your New York Times. While opposed to same-sex marriage, my impression is that the legislation will be changed. How hard should Christians continue the fight, given the likely loss of protection? Christians do take different positions. For those of you who are Christians, some think we just should get on with the work that Jesus says of, you know, letting people know about God's love. We're not called to be disinfectant in the culture, although we are called to be salt. I think various Christians will feel this deeply and will write. The very least people can do is write to your politicians, be part of the 24 million that vote for Channel 9. But I think we should fight lovingly. And when you get treated, John Dixon's got this phrase when he goes on media, etc. His intention is to lose well. He said, I don't expect to get a fair hearing, particularly something on Q&A. I expect I'll make a statement, I'll be misrepresented and mocked, but he takes it well. Just do it with gentleness and respect. I think that's what Christians should do. I've got friends who think by no means should we concede this is lost in the same way as the Republic was a no-brainer and it didn't get up. The difference is that the Republic only gets argued every 15 years. Referendums are hard to organise, but every time Parliament sits, this will be brought up. If the organisation we work for is openly supporting gay marriage, what's the best we can do? I don't know. I think it's like when you get invited to some friends who are having a gay marriage to their engagement party. Do you go? I think if you're a Christian, you just got to pray and work that out. Because at one level, you want to love them and be with them, but will you be misunderstood? Yes. But I think in this, you'll always be misunderstood. If you don't go, you'll be a hateful, homophobic dinosaur, a bigot. You're the cause of all the young gay men who kill themselves. You will be misunderstood in this. You just got to try to do what as best you can in this. I think one US urologist was sacked because he disagreed on the internet in the hospital on support that the hospital was giving to Gay Pride Week, and he disagreed on health grounds. He said, look, this is the health, as a urologist, the health problems of the gay community, both lesbian and homosexual, is, and should a hospital really be supporting something that we know increases people's sicknesses massively? And he was sacked. He lost his job. That may be a good thing to do, but these are very tough issues. And I think the difficulty is, I'm sorry I'm talking so fast, but we're just running late. I think one of the difficulties is this will bounce where we don't know where it will bounce. It's not ministers who are going to get in trouble with weddings. It's the people who work in the wedding industry who are already in trouble in Canada and the US. People have lost their livelihood. The people who said they wouldn't make a cake have been fined $130,000. They've gone bankrupt. Right? They weren't the only cake-making company. You know, it wasn't as if, you know, and even the lesbian couple said they were very kind to us. But $130,000 they were fined. And venue people have been fined. A number of Catholic charities have gone out of business because they won't adopt children out to gay families, so they've been taken out of business. I would think people who use schools will probably find they can't, because if you don't support same-sex, well, you're like someone who supports slavery. This will bounce who knows where, and I think we're just going to need to keep walking patiently and quietly if you're a Christian. If you're not, I've got no advice. Should we keep going, Peter, or not? Okay. Has the devaluing and redefinition of components of the definition, that is, for life, exclusion of all others in theory, and made it possible, even inevitable, to expect SS marriage? I think because marriage has been so attacked, every thread of marriage except the male and femaleness has been under attack in our culture for the last 70 years. So nothing stands beyond challenge. I think it has made it easier. And I think the fact that, as I say, even Walt Disney, which we were very restrictive on what we let our little girls watch when they're little, but Walt Disney constantly teaches the romance myth. That is the thing. So if someone's in love with someone that's the same sex, what sort of monster says you can't get married? Which is why the anger directed at people who are saying, we actually think marriage is different. We've got a different understanding of what marriage is. Because the fundamental driving doctrine, I think, of our culture is called expressive individualism. That whatever you feel, you are morally bound to live it out and express it. And if you get in the way of someone expressing what they feel they should do, you are a monster. Monica Lewinsky's mother, you know, the girl who got messed up with the president, she said, I knew my daughter was in trouble. I knew she'd fallen under the spell of a man who she felt couldn't be trusted. But she said, I couldn't say anything. The general said, why can't you? Well, if I'd said it to my... She was happy, she was excited, she was in love. And you're a monster if you say to someone, well, that's not quite true, is it? Because if someone's in love with children... See, this is the trouble with love, wins, and marriage. There's all sorts of... No, not with that. And not with that. I'm not saying homosexuality is the same thing as pedophilia at all. But what I'm saying is we do know that there are certain things we say no. That you may feel love, you may be wired that way, but our society, for whatever reason, says no. So I better stop there, sorry, just so you can go to work. Thank you for your patience. It's a big issue, isn't it? And it's a painful issue. And I do hope our society learns to embody the tolerance that we talk so much about on this.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.